Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 332 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyree, your host, as usual. Today, my guest is Brian Beckham. And Brian runs a law firm out of Houston, Texas, which is a very successful personal injury law firm that has been growing for the past 20 some odd years and has some really interesting cases. And we talk a lot about how you go from the initial small law firm, made it from the kitchen table to maybe one or two associates or maybe a couple of staff, how you take it to that next level where we're talking about multiple attorneys and lots of staff and a well-run business that allows you the opportunity to, as he says, spend as much time away from the office as he does inside the office. So it's a pretty entertaining hour or half hour, if you ask me, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. So without any further delay, here is Brian Beckham. Brian Beckham, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thanks for having me, Neil. I really appreciate it. I'm looking forward to the show.
I'm happy to have you with us today, Brian. Tell us, our audience, a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Yeah, so I was an Air Force brat. I moved around six or seven different places growing up. My father was a combat navigator in B-52s. And when I was very young, my mother, this is a little bit of a sad story, but actually it is a sad story. When I was young, my mom got breast cancer. And I was five. My brother was three. My dad was a major in the Air Force, and she was misdiagnosed about seven times. She was actually a nurse and had, like a lot of nurses, even in the early 80s, I knew about this, had been doing breast exams herself, and she felt something there. And she went to an Air Force doctor four or five times over a year, and he kept saying, "Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it." Well, by the time they finally caught it, it had metastasized, and she died about 4 years later. During the process, and the reason this is relevant to my story is my dad hired a personal injury lawyer in New York to represent our family in a medical malpractice case against the United States government. Now, of course, I didn't know it at the time because I was too young, but my dad won the case. He beat the United States government. There's a reported opinion called Beckham versus the United States. And I think, Neil, subconsciously, that kind of planted a seed in my head about what I wanted to do with my life. And so I end up going to Texas A&M University. I studied computer science and philosophy. I tell people,
go Aggies.
Yeah, Gig'em Aggies. I tell people, they're like, "Well, why did you go to law school?" And I said, "Well, I spent 4 years in college sitting behind computer screens with a bunch of computer nerds, and I didn't want to do that. And what do I do 20 years later? Sit in front of a computer screen." So in any event, I go to the University of Texas Law School. And
from the Aggies to the Longhorns.
Exactly. I tell people I got my education at A&M and I went to trade school in Austin. In any event, I was kind of one of these. They didn't even have personal injury firms interview on campus. Everybody at the University of Texas wanted to work at big law, big law type firms. And I was fortunate enough to be a good student. I really enjoyed the law. I was on the law review, et cetera, et cetera. So I got a number of big offers at big law firms. I ended up going to Fulbright and Jaworski in Houston. And after about 2 years, I realized this is not where I wanted to be. So I went off. shortly after that and started my own firm. And almost 20 years later, I think it's my partner and I, VB Attorneys is the name. V as in Victor, B as in Brian. We've been going for almost 20 years now. So that's kind of the short story, yeah, or the medium length story of how I got where I am today.
Well, here's some really, the audience can tune out for a second because I'm just going to riff here a little bit on, something personal. I was an Air Force brat myself. Moved around. And one of my fondest memories, my dad was stationed at Mather Air Force Base in Northern California, Central California, outside of Sacramento, which was a large B-52 base. And, he was a young airman at the time with a family. And Sunday afternoon entertainment was my English mother, born and raised in London, cooking the best fried chicken you can ever imagine, and taking a picnic and watching the B-52s land the airstrip. It's just and take off. Just a magnificent kind of thing as a young kid to see, until one of them crashed.
Oh, wow.
And it was that was the end of those picnics for a little while. But I remember when I was growing up, everybody had a model B-52 in their bedroom. Every boy did. I didn't know a single person who hadn't built the B-52 model.
Yeah.
So it was we kind of share that experience. So when you left big law, and isn't that the truth about law schools? They're always, I wouldn't say pushing, but the standard track is to get a gig with a big law firm as an associate, something that the law school can tout, but not everybody's cut out for that experience. And you hardly ever see personal injury firms recruiting on, law school campuses anymore or at all. And that's a viable alternative. So when you left big law, did you know you wanted to do personal injury at that point?
Yeah, I did. And I absolutely did. And I'll tell you kind of how I ended up doing it. So I was fortunate in that I tried 3 lawsuits in court in front of juries, 2 verdict in my first 2 years as a lawyer, which at big law is unheard of.
Unheard of. Absolutely.
Yeah. And one of them was a case where a young black guy, never forget his name was Eric Legrone, fell off. He was working for a plumbing company here in Houston, fell off a roof and hurt himself. And I thought I could defend this case. And I got absolutely hammered. I think I told the insurance company no worse than $130,000 verdict. The verdict was like $500,000 or something like that. And I'll never forget this, Neil. I'm a pretty competitive person, played sports growing up, played sports in college, still play sports. And I'll never forget when I was given this guy this check, this settlement check, feeling good about it and feeling like he deserved it and feeling like I was on the wrong side of the docket because I was glad that this guy was getting the money that he was getting. So you couple that with the story about my mother and what my dad did with my mother's case. And, I was kind of, I think, ultimately, that's just kind of the way I'm made.
So in that first case that you were on the defendant side, you were handing over the check.
I was paying the money.
You were paying the money out.
I was the one that got beat in trial 3 times worse than I told the insurance company I was going to get beat. And it didn't bother me that much because, like I said, I thought the guy was a good guy and he deserved the money, So,
isn't that funny too with personal injury? Because I think sadly, the perception of the public is that the personal injury space is largely dominated by people trying to get over, trying to, exploit the system and get paid for minor injuries, the typical McDonald's hot coffee in our lap scenario. Yeah. But the fact of the matter is this the only way that we have to put people back in the position they would have been in, but for the negligence of somebody else? And it's the same folks who poo-poo personal injury lawyers as being ambulance chasers that when they are in an accident and seek retribution, they change their tune. And so,
I'll give you a great example that the governor of Texas, which is where I'm from, Greg Abbott's in a wheelchair.
Right.
The reason Greg Abbott's in a wheelchair is because a tree fell on him when he was jogging when he was a young lawyer. And he sued both the homeowner and I think the tree company and got a massive settlement. Some people have said it was as much as $10 million. But he then became a sitting judge in Harris County and then the governor of Texas and passed tort reform laws that make it absolutely impossible for somebody that had the, has the exact same thing.
Same scenario.
Same scenario. He basically said, I pulled up the ladder after he got his money. Mm-hmm. Nobody else gets any money. But look, you know, I think people are getting wise. People have been wise to this for quite some time.
Sure they have.
Yeah. The bottom line is the insurance companies pay hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars in marketing to try to convince people not to sue people. But the insurance companies, Neil, they'll sue so fast it'll make your head spin. The businesses don't hesitate to sue other businesses. Businesses will sue other businesses at the drop of the hat. But God forbid a young child gets hit by an 18-wheeler and killed in front of his mother. God forbid somebody would bring a case like that, right? Yeah. But the people are wise to this at this point.
Insurance companies provide a valuable function to our society. They mitigate risk. Yep. Through insurance policies, but the marketing arm is so huge, and the whole idea of you're in good hands or what have you is great as long as you're paying your premium. Trying to recover a claim, and it can be a nightmare. Now, it's not always the case. But it can be a nightmare. But I don't want to spend a lot of time.
Can you imagine, Neil, though? So, I like to draw for this story, can you imagine if you were to buy a toaster and every time you wanted to make a piece of toast, you got charged extra? That's right. Basically what insurance is. Like you pay for it, and the second you want to use it, they charge you more. So, but you're right. Insurance is it's necessary in a commercial society like ours. The thing that is not necessary is giving insurance companies special protections that they don't need.
Well, exactly right. That's the whole point behind that.
And all you want is a level playing field. So if the insurance company is negligent, they should pay the consequences. If they're not, they shouldn't. But the way we've got it set up now is
it's a tilted playing field.
It's a completely tilted playing field. Exactly.
Yeah.
So
yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, listen, so you start, you're doing personal injury when you come out of big law. Learning your lessons from a couple of significant cases that you were lucky enough to take to trial as a big law attorney. And how did you grow your practice? Because I mentioned in the pre-call, we've had a lot of folks come on and talk about how they took their practice from, operating at the kitchen table to a significant business that provides them a comfort and a level of living that they're proud of. But there's that next step where V&B Lawyers, your law firm, has gone, made that next quantum step. And I'm kind of interested to hear from you what that journey was like and what were some of the significant points along the way as you went from starting a practice to having a really thriving, successful business.
Yeah. So really good question. So, and I think your podcast provides a fantastic service because like we were talking about before the show, you just don't learn this stuff in law school. You just don't. No. When I say stuff, what I mean is how to run a business, how to handle the finances, how to handle the marketing, how to get a line of credit, all the stuff that's associated with starting any business, not just a law firm, you kind of got to learn on your own. And so I left and started my own firm with my partner, Vuk, and we had zero cases, zero. Mm. We were able to get $100,000 line of credit, basically just on our name and law license. We had no collateral really of any kind to speak of. In our first year, we got a case that we had almost $100,000 in expenses in until we settled it, thank God. But it was a slow process at first. And so there's a guy named Ben Glass, who's a lawyer and also runs a marketing company called Great Legal Marketing.
Right here in Northern Virginia.
Yeah, Fairfax, Northern Virginia. Yep. I got to know Ben very, very early on when he started this. Mm-hmm. And thank God I did, because Ben taught me some things that I never would have learned had I not gotten to know him. And Ben and I are now pretty good friends now. But probably the most important thing that Ben Glass taught me was you need to design your life before you design your business. What do you want your life to look like? And see, what most people do, Neil, is most people do that in reverse, especially lawyers. Yeah, especially lawyers. Lawyers, and that's how I did it when I started. I said, man, I'm at Big Law. I'm at Fulbright and Jaworski. I got to work 10 hours a day, 6 days a week, and then I'll fit my life in with whatever spare time I have. When I started my own firm, I said, look, you know, I don't want to live like a Big law lawyer. That's why I'm leaving. I want to have a little more freedom. And so the first thing I would tell everybody is don't think necessarily about what you want your business to look like. Think about what you want your life to look like. And then the business fits into that piece. But the other thing I'll tell you, Neil, is especially as a plaintiff's personal injury lawyer, there's people that cheat and break the law and run cases, and ambulance chasing is a thing. And there are people that do that and are very, very successful early on. And we just don't do that, period. We've never done that, and we will never do that. And so it's taken us a little bit longer maybe than some of the people that are taking these shortcuts to build our firm. Now we've got 7 lawyers, almost 20 staffers strong. And we have some of the biggest cases in the country. We represent 1,000 Houston homeowners that were flooded by Hurricane Harvey. We have a bunch of combat veteran cases, a bunch of other stuff. And but the point, I think the question that you're asking is not necessarily how you started your firm, but how you went from, I mean, when we started, it was me and my partner and one paralegal. That was it. And now we've got a big office. It's nice and fancy, and we've got this big team, and we've got this marketing thing that really runs itself. So how do you make that step? And here's a couple of things I'll say about that. So I read this book called, I think it's called Clockwork, if I'm thinking, by a guy named Michael Michalowicz, which basically says, or my takeaway from the book was, the question I need to be asking myself as the business owner, if I want the business to grow, is not how I can be more efficient, not how I can be more productive, because the more productive and the more efficient I get, the more work that gets put on my plate. Right. So it's it's kind of a never ending loop if that's what your focus is. So I changed my focus after reading this book to not how can I be more efficient, how can I be more effective, but how can I make sure I have the right people in the right seats and doing the right thing. Like, I have hired an associate a couple years ago, and he is absolutely phenomenal, and I got the right person in the right seat. And what he enables me to do is he enables me to focus on really high level stuff with these cases, like preparing opening statements, closing arguments, attending mediation, bringing in more business. And he can do the day-to-day stuff. So if you want to grow and you want to not go completely insane, you have to have good people around you. And so that really, we could talk about all the ways I learned to market and stuff early on in my career, but in terms of going from 2-lawyer, 2-staff firm to what we've got now, that was the number one question for me, Neil. How do I make sure I have the right people in the right seats doing the right work? In other words, it's not my job to bake the cookies. I need to make sure I have good chefs to bake the cookies. My job is to sell the cookies, right? And you can do both. A lot of lawyers like to do both. But let me tell you something. If you want to bake the cookies and sell the cookies, you're never going to have a really big cookie store.
Yeah, you're gonna have trouble. I think the key is to find what it is that you do best and what it is that you like to do best.
100%.
And then design, as you said, your life and your firm around that.
Yeah.
Let me just tie up a couple of loose ends here. You know, we mentioned Ben Glass. Ben was a guest on the show a long time ago, back in episode 86, and in November of 2017. And ironically, the title of that podcast episode is Design the Lifestyle That You Want, Then Your Business.
There you go. I mean, that's Ben Glass 101.
The Ben Glass 101. So you're right on point with that. And just you know, Mike Michalowicz, actually, I've been lucky enough to meet him. Most people these days, particularly in the legal space, know him for the book that he wrote, Profit First.
Yeah.
And, but you know that he wrote, you know, a lot of other books. Clockwork is a great book. Another one, The Pumpkin Plan, was one that got a lot of run. And finally, he wrote one with, super fans at Flynn, but actually that might have been something else I'm thinking about. Anyway, so two great books, two great guys, and you know, two great mentors to follow. And your point about surrounding yourself with the right people, doing the right job. And again, you got to you have to find what you like to do best. You have to find people who like what they do best. No good to hire the best chef if they don't really like to cook.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
If you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients. You know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast.
As a law firm owner, you take responsibility for driving more revenue for your firm. But how much of that revenue ends up as bottom line profit? Ryan Himmler, the net profit CFO, helps law firms drive more top line revenue to bottom line profit. His two game-changing tools are the scorecard, so you can actually know what your numbers are and can make informed decisions, and the action plan, so you know how to get your numbers where you want them to be and drive more net profit. To learn more about Ryan, check out episode 306 of The Law Entrepreneur, and you can get a free profit acceleration call by going to go.oncehub.com/profit. I will also tell you, just as an aside, I am a client of Ryan's. I've been working with him for the past 6 months. Frankly, ever since he did that episode with me, I signed on with him to be a client. And I've been thrilled with the kind of information and insight he's been able to give me. So do yourself a favor, you know, get that free call and check out Ryan Kimmler at netprofit.com.
Are you struggling to get more clients for your law firm? Are you overwhelmed and feel burnt out from working too much? Sam Malai is a lawyer on a mission to liberate stressed out lawyers. As a legal disruptor, Sam Malai pioneered the virtual law firm model, building 3 multi-million dollar law firms in just under 5 years. As a lawyer, he has generated over 16,000 clients online and gathered over 3,000 5-star Google reviews. I'm going to go off script here just a little bit. I've known Sam for a long time. I am a client of his, a student of his. I took his course a long time ago, and I can tell you it's one of the best courses that I've ever taken. It was so chock full of useful information, hands-on instruction, no fluff, no waste of time. It was down and dirty, and I think it was one of the best courses that I've ever taken. And on top of that, Sam gives so freely of his time and his knowledge, both outside of the course and long after you're done. So, you know, I can't say enough about Sam personally, nor his courses, and as you're going to hear now, his book that he's written. So take that for what it's worth. Sam helps thousands of lawyers around the world create their own profitable law firm so they can work smarter and work less in his online implementation program called Legal Funnel. Over 4,000 legal funnel lawyers have applied this system to all types of practice areas, from transactional to litigation. Sam's new number one Amazon best-selling book, Virtual Law Firm Secrets, How to Run Your Law Firm So It Doesn't Run You, gives you the exact blueprint for liberating yourself from the traditional law firm practice to give you back your most important asset, your time. For a limited time, get a free copy. Listen to that. Get a free copy of Virtual Law Firm Secrets at legalfunnel.com/book. Again, get your free book at legalfunnel.com/book.
So, and you know, the other thing I think people have, people in, that own businesses have, especially, and not just lawyers, but especially lawyers, is they think they can do things better than everybody else can. Like, I think I'm better at writing briefs. I think I'm better at taking depositions sometimes than my staff. But you know what? That's not always true, number one. And number two, they're good enough to do the work. And if they want to get as good as the owner, which I want them to be, I got to step away a little bit and let my associates and my staff handle these things. Well, you know, one of the things that my staff tells me all the time, I go to Colorado for a month. I've been doing this for 14 years. I go for the entire month of July, basically. And my staff tells me they wish I would stay longer because <Right. laughs> they like it when I'm out of their hair, and they like me clearing out for a month. I mean, I still work every day, but they're sure. Like, hey, don't bother checking in if you don't want to. Go play golf because we got this. And so, you know, that's another thing I think business owners, it's being able to delegate and step out of the way is a skill.
I think that's the superpower of successful attorneys, is being able to delegate.
Yeah,
it's hard because, and we've heard this a million times on the podcast, and I can hear all of our listeners saying, yeah, I'd love to delegate, Neil, but I'm too busy doing all the work and washing the dishes and, you know, answering the phones. I don't even have time to delegate. And I certainly don't have time to train somebody to do what I do.
Yeah.
And it's a catch-22, but until you can step out of that, like you said, you're not going to be successful.
Yeah, 100%.
I hired a full-time virtual assistant a few months ago, and one of the things that we had to do in order to onboard her in the process was I had to actually lay out how my law practice works, because as a true solo before then, I didn't have to write any procedures. I didn't have to have any flow charts. I didn't have to think about how my practice worked, because it was all me, and I knew I knew what to do. But what I found was the physical act of laying it all out on paper was as helpful to me as having somebody to delegate the work to.
Yeah.
So, absolutely. And most people don't get to that point because they think it's such a big hurdle that they can't get over. And what they don't realize is it's actually the act of getting over that hurdle is going to make you smarter and more efficient.
Yeah, 100%. You know, what I started doing, and this is, I got this from Michael too, and this is in his book, Clockwork, is I found when I was hiring lawyers, I was telling them the same thing again and again and again and again. So I finally sat down one time, pretended like I had just hired a new lawyer, and I dictated about a 5-page memo, and I constantly update it. And it has my entire spiel, like how to be a plaintiff's lawyer, how to work at our firm, books to read, articles to read, where your focus should be, expectations, philosophy, just all everything I could think of. And now when I hire a new lawyer, I just say, I email them this memo and I just say, read this. And that idea, by the way, is directly out of Michael's book. Michael says that so for example, for the law firm owners that are listening to the show, when you tell your staff, here's how we want to do this particular process, record that. Yeah. And then put it somewhere where everybody can see it. And then the institutional knowledge of your firm will over time gradually grow and grow and grow to the point. So I have all these videos now. I actually we use Slack to
manage. Well, that's what I was going to ask you about the video. Have you gone to video for all of that?
Yeah, we use Slack to manage our firm. We literally have a channel in Slack called VB University. And when we hire somebody new, there's all these videos people can watch. There's memos. Everything is in there. And we say, just go to this channel and read all this stuff. And so that idea is directly taken out of the book Clockwork. And it's another phenomenal idea I got out of that book. Yeah.
You know. One of the issues that we discussed last week with our guest was how making or adding the maintenance, the updating, and the responsibility to keep those video procedures up to date is best served by the person actually doing it. So you make it the responsibility of the employee to keep all of that up to date. If you change how we do something, you're responsible for updating the video description of how it's done. And that way, because again, look, I'm a true solo, or largely a true solo. And I know the complaint of most solos are that, well, I don't have time to create a policies and procedures manual.
Yeah.
Well, just record what you're doing.
Yeah. That's all you got to do. That's all you got to do.
That's all you got to do. And you can do. Yeah. There's an application called Loom, which can record this, you know, a screencast of the steps that you're going through, or get on a Zoom call with nobody, just hit record and talk to the screen and share your screen, and you've produced the video that describes the policy and procedure that you're trying to implement.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, you can write a book like that too. I actually got that idea from Ben. So I've written 6 books.
Well, God, you really anticipated my next question, because I was just going to say, I know you've also written a whole bunch of books there, Brian. Tell us a little bit about the topics that your books cover. And I'm a geek. I'm more interested, after I learned what you've written, how you wrote them.
That's right. And that's, you know, how you get this done is a big question. And so I'll tell you what I did. And I got this idea from Ben Glass. Early on in my career. So we do a lot of maritime injury cases. That's a little bit of a specialty area.
Really?
We're some of the best in the country.
Houston. Is that a big center for maritime law?
It's a huge thing, because we got the biggest port in the nation. Plus, we've got all the oil companies and all the offshore oil drilling and stuff. Matter of fact, if we got time, I'll tell you about my most famous case, which was the Captain Phillips case, where the Somali pirates attacked an American shipping vessel, and they made a movie out of it starring Tom Hanks. I represented the crew of that ship. But in any event,
Hold on a second. Because I love that freaking movie.
Yeah, I represented the crew of that ship.
I'm your captain now.
Exactly. Yeah. I tell you, you know, that line, by the way, the guy that played that role was a Somali national, and he was not a professional actor.
He was from Minneapolis.
He was from Minneapolis. That's what I was about to say. Yeah, there's a whole Somali community
Who
there.
Knew?
And that line was improvised. That was not in the script.
Oh, really?
He came out there and he said that, but anyway, that was a really fun case. I was on Dateline and Nightline and Good Morning America and the London Daily Times and the New York Times. I got a lot of publicity from that case. But the point we were talking about was the books. And so what I originally did was I wrote this book for mariners, for seamen that work on boats and ships and rigs and stuff like that over the water. And what I did was I took the 25 most asked questions. I wrote them down on a sheet of paper. I walked out in my backyard and I dictated the answers to those 25 questions. And I have an app called SpeakRite, which is an awesome app. If you haven't heard, I'm sure you've heard of it.
Yep, yep.
But if people have, for your listeners, they're literally live transcriptionists on the other end. You dictate it into your phone. It sends it there. And depending on how long it is, you get it back super quick. And so that's how I did it. And so I get this dictated stream of consciousness question answering thing back. And then I edit it up. And then there's companies that will publish these books. They'll help you edit it, put it in a nice cover and all that stuff. And so it's really a lot easier than you think. I have a series of books on personal injury law, maritime law, how to hire a good lawyer, how to not get blackballed in your industry. And then the other book I have is a book about success. And so that book was even easier to write because here's how I wrote that book. I used to have a newsletter, still do. Well, it's not a hard copy anymore. Now I do it by email. But
sure.
The first copy, the first thing in my newsletter was an article that I would write about something that I had read about success or happiness or things like that. And then the rest of it would be law related stuff. And I just took every one of those articles and put them into a book. And so basically I wrote the book over 2 years by writing a monthly newsletter with a success article in it. So the point of this is a lot of this can be repurposed. Like, I know you know this, Neil, but there are services that will transcribe podcasts for us, and then we can literally go through that, edit it, and turn a podcast episode into a book without much effort. So I think people have this notion that you got to sit down and like literally spend a month doing nothing but writing the book, and there's lots of ways to do that.
There's lots of ways to do that. A couple things that come to mind. You know, we've talked about this on the program before, that if you're publishing a blog on your website, a blog post, that's the best way to create new content. Google loves new content on your website. A blog or a video FAQ page is, you know, one of the greatest things to do. Now, if you've been at it for a while and you're consistent with doing it, and you've got, you know, I don't know how often people, you know, post blog posts, but if you got 15, 20, couple years worth of blog posts, you got a book. You've already written it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You don't have to write it again. It's yours. You just need to package it up a little bit and poof, you've got a book, and you can use that in all kinds of different ways. And
100%.
Victor Medina, who's been on the program a slew of times, he holds the record for most often appearing on The Law Entrepreneur. He wrote his books by dictating into his phone. And for those, everybody knows, I'm an Apple geek. Apple on your iPhone has voice to text translation built into the phone. Doesn't even have to go through the cloud. Yep. So you can just open up an app like Drafts, and it gives you a blank page, and you hit that microphone, and you start talking into it, and it's going to translate your speech into text. And when you turn the microphone off, you already have it. You don't have to send it anywhere. It's already there in your draft document. So that's another little tip for writing your book. Now, I know that the books that you've done and you know, the newsletters that you've written, and the success that you've had has put you in contact with a lot of, you know, folks that we would think of as leaders in various industries. And you've parlayed that into your own podcast. Tell us about your podcast a little bit.
Yeah. So I started, it's called Lessons from Leaders with Brian Beckham. And I had been thinking, Neil, about starting a podcast for years, but questions I had were, what was I going to talk about and who the heck gives a shit, pardon my language, about what some random lawyer thinks about anything.
I hear you.
So I was kind of figuring out like what the conceit would be, like what would be the purpose of it. And literally during quarantine, which I took very seriously, we were, you know, my wife and family and I were basically in the house for 3 or 4 months and not much to do. And I'm online all the time and I see all this negativity. And people are constantly complaining about everything. And I'm like, man, you know what? I want to get some positivity out in the world. So I was searching for a name, and I was sitting out on my back porch with my wife drinking a glass of wine. And she goes, how about Lessons from Leaders? And I was like, oh, that's so good. So
isn't it funny how you get, you know, somebody can come up with one line, you know, holy cow, that is perfect.
It's so good, and it's good on multiple levels. First of all, it sounds good. Second of all, Neil, do you know how easy it is when I ask people, do you want to be on a leadership podcast?
Absolutely.
Like, I know everybody wants to be on a leadership podcast, right? And I'll tell you, here's a really cool story. So guess who my first guest was?
I have no idea.
Ben Glass.
Well, okay. Well, that makes sense now.
And Ben did a absolutely phenomenal job. But the other thing, you know, the other thing I think that worked out perfectly was it makes it a lot easier when you do it by Zoom. It's a lot easier from, I can get better guests because I'm not Joe Rogan. I can get better guests if I can say, all you got to do is sit in front of your computer for an hour. But in any event, I, because of my military background and also my sports background, I know a lot of military people. I know a lot of sports people and stuff like that. And so what happened with me, Neil, is that, you know, I had military generals and Thunderbirds pilots, and I had a few sitting congressmen and some Hall of Fame coaches. And then I didn't realize this when I started, but there's a whole podcast ecosystem. So I told the guy that worked with me, that helped me produce it early on, I said, well, no, the podcast has turned a corner when people start asking us to be on the podcast.
Right. Exactly.
Well, now I get so many requests every week that I can't even, you know, one in five, maybe I can do so. But the podcast has been super fun for me. It's obviously a good marketing to be able to say, in addition to being a lawyer, I also have a leadership podcast, and it's 100% positive. It's not a debate podcast. Mm-hmm. We're not sitting there arguing with each other, and it's just been a blast. And, you know, I would encourage people, if you're thinking about it, stop thinking about it and just do it. Cause not that hard.
As I told you, when I decided to do the podcast, I just said, hey, I'm going to do a podcast. And that's all the level of thinking that I gave it. I just jumped in, and having made that decision, I said, well, let me see how I would do that. But I remember I had a business partner in one of my previous careers, who went on, he was a bigwig in the financial services area, and he had a interview program on the local cable TV channel. And I said to him one time, I said, Tom, what the hell are you doing an interview program on local cable TV? Nobody's watching that channel. Nobody cares about that. He says, no, they don't. But you know what kind of advantage I have over other financial planners when I ask a potential client or a referral source, when I ask them to come on my TV show? nobody turns me down. And it's great for my business. And I would say, for a lot of attorneys who are thinking about it, you know, you got to do something that's genuine. You got to do something that's true to who you are. In your case, it was, you know, lessons from leaders. You know, a lot of people in leadership positions. It was a natural, it fit. When I had somebody suggest to me, and you know, maybe you want to do an interview program about what they didn't teach you in law school about running a business, I went, boom, that's it. I don't have to think anything further. That defined the program, that defined who I was going to have. And it's as easy as that sometimes. So it doesn't have to be difficult.
Yeah, that's true, 100%.
And the barrier to entry is pretty simple. You got Zoom and a headset.
That's all. And I will say, and I think you agree with this, I'm using a headset and a professional Shure SHURE mic.
Yep.
You need good audio. Like, that is so important.
So here's
the podcast.
Here's the deal. People will excuse a lot of things. They'll excuse, you know, bad content sometimes. They'll excuse rambling hosts like me who has inane questions, long-winded questions. Get to the point of the question, Neil. But what they won't excuse is bad audio. You got bad audio, they're going to turn you off right away.
100%.
So
100%.
Anyway, I urge our listeners to check out Lessons of Leaders. Did I get that right?
Lessons from Leaders.
Lessons from Leaders.
Yeah,
you can find that on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and any place you get your podcast. Brian, tell our audience, if they want to reach out to you and talk about anything that we've discussed today, what's the best way to do so?
Yeah. So brianbeckham.org is my website where I host the podcast and I host my writings and stuff like that. And it's a little bit of an unusual last name spelling. It's B-E-C-K C-O-M, B-E-C-K-C-O-M. That's kind of my primary website. My law firm website is VB Attorneys. That's V as in Victor, B as in Brian, Attorneys, all one word. And then I'm on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and I use my own name. So those are the primary places to reach me.
To remind, is brianbeckham.org, did you say, or com?
.org.
.org. Yeah. Okay, great. Yeah. Well, we'll have all of that in the show notes. So for those of you on the treadmill or in the car, don't fret. You can get it in the show notes. And Brian, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to be with me today. And I really do appreciate it. Next time I'm down in Houston, put on my cowboy hat and come see you.
Come see me. I'll buy you a Shiner Bock.
There you go.
It was a real pleasure. And Neil, like I said earlier, this is a great podcast, and it really provides a good positive service. So thank you for having me on. I really, really had a good time.
Well, thank you for being here. And I do appreciate you taking the time today to be on The Law Entrepreneur.
You got it, my friend.
Well, there you have it, boys and girls, another episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors for this episode, our good friends at Ruby. I can't say enough about Ruby. As you know, they've been my virtual receptionist for years now. Couldn't be happier with them, and I really urge all of you, if you need a virtual receptionist, that you give Ruby a chance. Also, Net Profit CFO, as I've mentioned before, Ryan Kimler was a guest on the program some time ago. I liked what he had to say so much, I became a client, and then after I became a client, he became a sponsor. So very happy about that arrangement. If you want to take your understanding of your financials in your law firm to that next step beyond just what your bookkeeper gives you back, give Ryan a call at Net Profit CFO. I don't think you'll be disappointed. If you enjoyed this podcast, do me the great favor of leaving a positive rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. It really helps with the opportunity for us to get in front of other people. And until next week, I wish you all the best, and we'll see you again here on Law Entrepreneur.